Welcome to The Truth About Lending. I'm Melinda Payne, the president and owner of The Truth About Lending. I've been a licensed mortgage broker for over 25 years and bring you clear and straightforward insights on everything from securing your initial home purchase to refinancing your house or obtaining condo financing in Florida's dynamic lending market. Now let's get into The Truth About Lending. No, you're not alone. I'm gonna make this place your home. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's Lunch and Learn. Today, we will be discussing a guide to no income verification loans and the various choices that you have. So what are we talking about exactly as a no income verification loan or alternative income documentation loan? And how is it different than the loans from many years ago? And how does it work? And who are they for? These are all really great questions. So basically, no income verification loans are generally for somebody who is self-employed or perhaps an investor. And you don't want to provide us with your tax returns, or perhaps you feel that it's too much paperwork to provide us with the tax returns, or whatever the case may be. You do not want to get into the normal income documentation path for a regular conventional or FHA loan or typical normal conventional income documented loan. And so what options do you have if you're self-employed or perhaps you are somebody who is newly self-employed or maybe you are somebody that is not currently employed, but you have high assets. You could also be an investor who's trying to purchase a property in a corporation. There's a lot of different reasons why we would be looking at alternative financing. Okay, so let's first talk about the different occupancy types and the different programs that are available for the occupancy types. What does that mean? If you're going to buy a property as a primary residence versus purchasing the property as an investment property, there are different income requirements and different no income verification loans. And so there are some no income verification loans or alternative income documentation loans that are specifically for investors. And then there are some that are specifically for a primary residence. So the occupancy intention, what you are planning to do with the property, plays a big role in reference to what we tell you that you could qualify for. So let's first talk about purchasing a property as a primary residence and what options that you have with the alternative income routes. So some people may have heard of a bank statement loan. And if you haven't heard of a bank statement loan, what we're looking at is a loan that is based on the cash flow, not the ending balance. A lot of people think this is based on the ending balance. It's not. It's actually based on your monthly cash flow. And we're looking at your bank statements to reflect the cash flow of the income from your company. Now, you could use a business bank statement or you could use a personal bank statement. But what we're really looking at is do the deposits reflect an accurate idea of the cash flow from your company? Now, I'll give you an example. If you've got a business bank account that we're using and you have $10,000 a month of transfers into that account, but $5,000 of those transfers are from clients or deposits, not necessarily transfers, but $5,000 of the deposits are from clients or income from the company, and the other $5,000 are transfers from your personal account to the business account to supplement the business account, or perhaps you're transferring it from another business account to a different business account, like maybe you have an operations account, and then you're transferring it to a different payroll, whatever it is. But if it's a transfer and it's not actually income, it's not actually representative of business income, those figures are going to be backed out. What we're looking at is, do you have business deposits? You know, if you're a hairdresser and you're self-employed, are these from clients? If you're selling cars, are these from people purchasing cars? If you're running a computer company, are you getting income from clients who are paying invoices? So depending upon the cash flow of the bank account, we're going to come up with a calculation. Now, this calculation is pretty involved. We really need to look at the last 12 months of your bank statements. There is an option to go back 24 months and get a little bit better of an interest rate, but we usually start with the last 12 months. And what we're looking at is the monthly deposits, and also, what we're also looking at is the percentage of ownership that you have in the company. So if you own 50% of the company, we're only going to give you credit for 50% of the deposits. Now, in addition to that, there's also something called an expense ratio. So let's just take a scenario where we have somebody who owns 100% of the company. Okay, so we're not doing any kind of haircut for another owner or anything like that. You own 100% of the company. You have $10,000 a month of deposits. We've gone through the deposits and we've determined that these deposits are all client deposits and that none of them are transfers or money that you put into the company or that you took a loan on a credit card, but these are actual real business deposits. Well, then we're going to assign an expense ratio to your company that is going to differ quite a bit depending on the kind of company that you have. For example, if your company has high cost, like you're making widgets and you're selling widgets and there's a cost to purchase those widgets and there's a cost of inventory, you may have a higher cost ratio that we assign to the deposit. So we may say, hey, your expense ratio is 50%. So we're only going to take 50% of those deposits. But let's say you're a psychologist and you have very low overhead, or you're somebody that offers services and you have very low overhead, then there might be an opportunity for us to use a lower expense ratio and use maybe a 20% expense ratio. So we're using 80% of the deposits. So everybody's situation is unique and we're not going off of what's left in the bank account. We're looking at the monthly cash flow. Now, of course, you need to have the money for the down payment and the closing cost. And that is something that can be provided to us and sourced in a different bank account if needed. But the income part of this is based on the different deposits and cash flow that you have on a monthly basis. So that's what a bank statement loan is. You know, we run into a lot of people who think that a bank statement loan is based on what's left at the end of the month. And so they may have, you know, $20,000 a month in deposits in and $20,000 a month in expenses out. And they think, hey, I can't do this kind of loan. That's not necessarily true. This is something that you definitely should talk to one of our loan officers about so that we can determine whether or not you could qualify for this kind of loan. Now, typically we, with a bank statement loan, we're kind of looking at credit score requirements down to, maybe around a 620 credit score, but there are a lot of restrictions once you get below a 680 credit score. And you have a lot more flexibility the higher the credit score. For example, if your credit score is over 720, you may be able to put down as little as 10%. If your credit score is 680, then you're probably looking at 20% down. And the lower you go on the credit score, the higher the down payment becomes. And of course, it's also very property specific. So if it's a condo, it's a different down payment than if it's a single family home. If it's a duplex or a fourplex, it's a different down payment than a single family home. So these are all things to talk to your loan officer about. Also, in addition to that, One thing to note is that the interest rates are generally around 2% higher, somewhere in that range. It could be somewhere between 1.5% to 2.5% higher, depending on your credit score, your down payment, the property type, the occupancy intention. Although right now we're talking about owner-occupied properties or primary residences, you're looking at roughly around 2% higher on the interest rate. So then also on top of that, on top of that, we also have a program. Pardon me for one moment. That's called a profit and loss program. So this is a program where your accountant actually prepares a profit and loss and then gives it to us. And then we use that as your income. It does have to be prepared by a CPA. I have found that this program is a pretty difficult program to get done because most CPAs, if they're preparing a profit and loss, are just going to say, why don't you just give them your taxes? And if you're trying to avoid giving us your tax returns, usually this does not work out, but it is a program that is available. It's called a profit and loss program where you're not giving us your bank statements other than the proof of funds for closing. Okay. You're not giving us the bank statement history. You're giving us a profit and loss that is prepared by a CPA. Then there is another program called a community mortgage program, which is basically we're not stating an income and we're not stating a job. It's literally just your social security number and your assets, and you're not even putting a job or employment on the application at all. Now, this program is a much higher down payment, a much higher credit score requirement, and a much higher reserve requirement. So let's just talk about that. What is a reserve requirement? Reserves are something that the lender wants to see that you have in the bank. It is not something that you put with the lender. It's not something that you pledge with the lender. It's not something that you have to put in an account somewhere or that you're required to bring to closing. It's basically just for the bank to see that you have the reserves. And the reserves they're looking for typically on the bank statement and the profit and loss program is usually about 6 months reserves. So if the mortgage payment, taxes, insurance, association dues are $4,000 a month, they want to see that you have $24,000 in the bank somewhere after your down payment, after your closing costs. So it could be in a retirement account. It could be in stocks and bonds. It could be in various places, but they're looking for reserves. Now, the no documentation loan that I just mentioned, where we're not stating employment and we're not stating income in any way, or we're not using bank statements, I should say, to show the income, those programs are typically 20 to 25% down. You have to have a very high credit score, 720 or higher. And they usually want to see a significant amount of reserves. Depending on the credit score and loan amount, it could be anywhere from a year to 2 years of reserves. And so it's a big difference. These reserve requirements are not something where there's a ton of flexibility. They really want to make sure that you have the financial wherewithal to be able to support the mortgage payment. And most of these programs do require for you to pay your taxes and your insurance with your mortgage. They don't allow you to waive escrows in general, meaning that they want you to pay your taxes, your insurance in the mortgage payment. Waiving escrows means that you're paying your taxes and your insurance on your own. So most of these programs require it. In reference to the different down payments on a primary residence, as I said, there is a program that is as little as 10% down. The rate is probably one of the higher rates of the programs because you're putting down less than 20%. And at different increments, the rates get better. There is never any mortgage insurance on these programs if you are putting down less than 20%. And it is very specific to the borrower. In other words, we really need to make sure we have looked at your bank statements. We've gone over all of the deposits. We've pretty much pre-underwritten the file prior to issuing you a pre-qualification. So if this is a loan that you're interested in doing, please speak with one of our loan officers. We will walk you through every step and try to really look at all of the possible options that you have and give you a presentation of the interest rate, the programs, the down payments, and everything else. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about investor loans and investor cash flow loans. So what you're looking at with an investment loan is basically the option to buy a property using the potential rental income of the property. That's called a debt service coverage ratio loan, excuse me, or a DSCR loan. These loans are for investors. You could purchase the property or refinance the property. You could take cash out on the property in a property, in a LLC, in a corporate name. That's not a problem. And what you're really looking at in these scenarios is a rate that is pretty much determined on the debt service coverage ratio. So what the heck does debt service coverage ratio mean? And how does it work? Okay. Debt service coverage ratio is the ratio of how much the rental income covers the mortgage payment. If you have a $2,000 mortgage payment and a $2,000 rental income, it is a one-to-one ratio. If you have a $2,000 mortgage payment and you have a $2,500 rental income, now it's covering it by 1.25%. The rent is covering the mortgage payment by 1.25% in that scenario. So generally one to one or higher is going to give you the best rates, the lowest down payments, or if you're doing a refinance, the most cash out. And that's going to be the best case scenario. However, in Florida, because of the cost of insurance, we generally see the opposite of that. We usually see the rent is not fully covering the whole mortgage payment. Now, there's the different reasons why maybe somebody is going to do a short-term rental and there's no history of short-term rentals. Now, sometimes we can use short-term rentals in the analysis. It's very specific to your transaction. So you do want to speak with one of our loan officers about that. But if it is a rental property that the mortgage payment is $2,000 and the rental income is $1,500, now it's 0.7 or 0.75. So it's literally at a position where there's a loss of 0.25% of or 25% of the mortgage payment you're covering. Now, some of our lenders go down to 0.7 or a debt service coverage ratio that is below covering the mortgage payment. And then we have other lenders that do a no ratio loan where they don't even do the calculation at all. So the lower you get in your coverage ratio or the less that the rent covers the mortgage payment, the higher down payment that you're going to be required to have or the higher the interest rate is going to be. So the more coverage it has, the lower the interest rate, the lower the down payment, the higher, let's stop there for 1 second. The lower the coverage, the higher the down payment, the higher the coverage, the lower the down payment. Got it. I feel like Willy Wonka and when you go to the scratch and sniff wallpaper and he says, wait a minute, switch that. Anyways, so what we're talking about is with the DSCR loans, those interest rates could be somewhere between 2 to 3% higher than where the Fannie Mae conventional rates are, depending upon your situation. If there's a lot of equity and a big down payment and really great credit scores and this the debt service coverage is really good, you might only be like 1.5% higher than conventional rates. The typical down payment that you're looking at for those type of properties are generally 20 to 35% down, depending upon the coverage ratio. So it really is going to be dependent upon what we see with the total potential rental income. Now, the potential rental income is determined by an appraiser that does what's called a fair market rental analysis. And they go out and they say, okay, based on all of the closings of the rental income closings, the rental closings, not closings on the sale of the house, but the actual rental history, we think this property is going to appraise and have a rental income of $2,000 a month. And then we're basing it on the rental income analysis that the appraiser gives us, not what you tell us, not what your realtor tells us. The only time there's a little bit of an exception to that is if it's a refinance or you're purchasing an investment property with a tenant, then if you have a lease that's in place, there's a little bit of flexibility with that. Or if there's a history of receiving short-term rental income from the property, then there's also a little bit of flexibility with that. Now, let's just talk about that because short-term rental income is pretty big in Florida. And remember what we just said, the higher the income that you have, the better the coverage, so the lower the interest rate. So what's good about short-term rental income is that if there's a history of receiving it, or if it's a property that is going to have short-term rental income, then you're going to get a much higher income on a monthly basis. You're going to get a much higher coverage of the ratio. Now, it has to make sense. Let's just take an example that it's a condo on the beach, two-bedroom condo, walking distance to the beach or close to the beach, could be, you know, doesn't have to be walking distance, but it's, you know, closer to the beach. That makes sense that that would be a short-term rental income as long as the condo association allows short-term rental income, or a townhouse that's maybe closer to a recreational area. Now, if it's a five-bedroom house that's in the suburbs, for example, in Parkland or in Weston or in Cooper City or someplace that's further west away from the beach, if we're looking specifically like in South Florida, of course, it could be anywhere in Florida, then it may not make sense as a short-term rental income, although there should be an argument to be made that in Florida, any property could be eligible for short-term rental income. The best thing to do is to go to a website called AirDNA. That's A-I-R-D like David and like Nancy, A like Apple. And you could go ahead and plug in the property address to see what the potential daily rental income will be. That's what an underwriter is going to do. They're generally going to go to a third-party source and determine if it's consistent with a short-term rental market. AirDNA will also provide you with a vacancy ratio as well. And below certain ratios, the underwriters won't take short-term rental income. Now, not every bank uses AirDNA, but it is something that's a really great resource to you as an investor if you decide that you'd like to rent a property out with short-term rental income. Now, the debt service coverage ratio loans, or the DSCR loans, are only for investors. It's not for primary residence. It's not for a second home. It's only for investment properties. So it's really important that we're looking at each property specifically and the occupancy type for each property. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about is something called asset depletion. Now, asset depletion is an alternative income documentation program. It allows us to use your assets as income as opposed to using your actual income. Now, actually, there's an option to do this with a conventional loan as well, but there's a little bit more flexibility when we're looking at some of the alternative financing. What we're doing is taking the total assets that you have and we're dividing it by a certain number. With conventional loans, they're dividing it by the amortization of the loan. With a alternative loan, some of these no income verification loans, they're generally dividing it by 36 months. Some of them go to 60 months. It just depends on the program, your credit score, and the criteria of what you're trying to do. But there is an asset depletion loan where you don't have to do the last 12 months of your business bank statements, or you don't have to look at doing a bank statement loan where we're taking the deposits. Now, of course, we need your bank statements because it's an asset depletion loan, but this is an option that a lot of people who maybe are retired or perhaps have a high net worth and they really don't want to get into their tax returns, this is an option that is available where we're looking at your total assets and being able to divide it by a certain amount. Generally, this program requires 20% down. There are various credit score requirements depending upon the occupancy, property type, and whether or not we're doing a conventional loan or we're doing one of the alternative income documentation loans. So that's really what we're looking at as far as some of the alternative income documentation loans. Many of these programs are available for foreign nationals as well. We will talk a little bit more about that next week. And one other thing I want to mention is in reference to investor loans, you can take title of the property and the mortgage in a corporation's name. However, you still have to personally guarantee the loan. So there is a personal guarantee that's required, but the mortgage and the deed will actually be in the corporate name. So this is a really great option. And for those who are self-employed and who are looking to buy a primary residence, a bank statement loan, where we're looking at either your personal or your business bank statements, is also a really great option in lieu of tax returns. So that pretty much wraps up the no income verification loan types or the choices that you have as a no income verification loan goes. There's a few different variations on some of these points, but they're very specific. So please talk to one of our loan officers regarding your situation. And also please join us next week. We are going to be exploring the loan options for foreign nationals. That's going to be a really great session. We're going to talk all about what options foreign national people have, what is truly a foreign national person, and the different classifications, because there's a lot of people here that are not permanent resident aliens and they're not citizens, but they're a lawful non-resident, and there's different statuses for those. All right, so that wraps up today. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, please join us next week when we get into a really great conversation about foreign national loans. And remember to subscribe on our YouTube channel. And you can always reach out to any of our loan officers, either on our website, thetruthaboutlending.com, or give us a call at 888-76-TRUTH. And have a great week, everyone. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Truth About Lending. Stay up to date with all Florida loan and mortgage news by subscribing to our channel and help us grow so we can continue bringing you insight and advice. Please like, share, and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can find the links to all our social media profiles in the description. You can find extra resources on our website, thetruthaboutlending.com. If you have any questions about Florida mortgages, we are licensed and ready to talk to you today. Call us at 888-76-TRUTH. That's 888-768-7884. You can also email us at melinda@ttal.info or visit us at our website, thetruthaboutlending.com. Until next time, remember, the truth about lending is out there for you.
No, you're not alone, because I'm going to make this place your home.